Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, and here we are. It is Monday, a minute and a half past the hour. I'm home from D.C. Guy is back in sunny Florida. Not so sunny here. A little bit cool. Could be colder. Could be worse. But I'm back in the home studio, and I'm really, really glad to be here because the new week is upon us, and with every new week, well, you know how the weeks begin, right? Sure. That's right. It's Moran Monday. Morans aplenty. Morans abound. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Come on down, see the stunning morons. Morans on parade from the GOP. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I don't know how stunning slipped into that little bit there, but yes, I do. this is, you can tell that they're the morons are sort of feeding off of each other. A few weeks back, one of the biggest morons in America, Representative Michelle CO2 is natural, therefore it's good for you, Bachman, described Representative Steve King, Iowa, another moron, as stunning, saying he'd be he's stunning and he'd make a great president. Well, it turns out that Representative Steve King, Iowa, moron, gave an interview to some local Iowa television station, WHO-TV, an NBC affiliate in Des Moines, where he wouldn't say yes and he wouldn't say no. He was being all coy. But what he did say, never mind. Just let it be what it is.
But we are calling for people to come to Washington, D.C., fill up the Capitol, fill up the offices, let them see the look in your eye, and let them hear the tone in your voice when you let them know respectfully that you don't want them to take away your freedom to purchase your health insurance policy of your choice. And if you can't come to Washington, then I want people to come to these district offices, fill up the offices, get on the telephones, call into talk radio, write emails and letters, make phone calls, visit, but above all, fill up Washington, D.C. If we can do that, we can turn this around. And it is not going to be an argument that I make to other members of Congress or anybody else for that matter. They are dug in. The only thing that will change their mind is if they realize that they might lose their job and the American people might call them home for taking away our freedom.
One thing I heard you say.
Taking away our freedom. Our freedom to be sick. Our freedom to die from needless disease. Our freedom to watch our loved ones descend into the hell, damnation, agony, misery, and chaos of illness that could be prevented by access to meaningful medical care. Yes, take away our freedom. That's what them liberals is trying to do. Take away our freedom to be miserable and sick. But then again, when you're Representative Steve King and you've got a brain as diseased as his, sickness may look like something good. Now, let's go on with Steve King on this Moran Monday, if you please.
And there is do it respectfully. Does that mean that some of what we saw at the town halls, the passion is good, but maybe the volume was too much in your mind, or what do you think?
Well, at each one of my meetings, I had at least one person that got up and vociferously disagreed with me. And the very first one, I turned to the public that was booing and hissing him and said, let Larry have his say. Because I've a number of times voiced an unpopular opinion, and I always appreciate it if people would listen to my full argument. So I don't think the volume has to be real loud, but I think people need to convey not just their argument on the facts, but let them know what it really means to watch our freedom be diminished and be put into a compartment where our kids could never, ever buy a health insurance policy like we can buy today. The government will write all the rules. It's in the bill. And no one can sell health insurance the way...
Yeah, but Steve, what about the people who can't buy the health insurance right now? Not children, not some generation down the road. What about children right now who can't get health insurance? You know, you're Steve King. You voted repeatedly against the expansion of the CHIPS program so more children could have insurance. What about that, Steve? Well, never mind. You just really hope people will come to Washington and have a little teabagging riot there in D.C. Do you want them to bring their guns, Steve? Should they bring their guns to Washington, D.C., too? I don't know. Of course, the for-profit journalist didn't get around to that question.
It is today, after 2013, according to this bill, the government will write new rules. So let's be respectful, but let them know that it matters more than just an analytical analysis, and it does get emotional when you're talking about taking away people's freedom.
The president's administration...
He's got his talking points down, doesn't he? When you take away people's freedom... How free are you when you're on a ventilator in a hospital bed? How free are you? How free are you when you're laying dying at home because you don't have health care and you were afraid, you know, back when the disease was treatable, you were afraid to go to the doctor because of the bills that would be involved. How free are you then, Steve?
Sending out numbers, I think it started yesterday, about how many jobs the stimulus package has created. Buying those numbers and are...
Okay, here comes the Moran math made easy.
Are they where they were supposed to be?
Well, I think it's interesting, the question about how many jobs the stimulus package has created. I remember the promise was that they were going to create or save 3 million jobs. And we got down to where it may have saved some jobs and created some government jobs. But if you can't draw a definition and tell us how many have been saved versus how many have been created, I'm not going to be willing to agree or accept the numbers in either category. And when you use that, let's say that verbal sleight of hand, save or create, on that day when the language came out, save or create 3 million jobs, I said then that if there are 3 million jobs left in America, that will be the jobs they point to and say, see, we saved those. So you can't do it from government. You can't create jobs from government. Free enterprise creates jobs. It pays all the bills. It produces the goods and services that are necessary for survival and quality of life. And government takes the vitality from the...
In China, of course. The quality of life in China. Because thanks to the Steve Kings of the world supporting, you know, that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout that was president for the last 8 years, they hold all that bad paper that George hung and that Steve was more than willing to help hang all over China. So it's quality of life there. Because China's got us by the, and it hurts, and we are, but we dare not squeal. Thanks, Steve.
Private sector and uses it to regulate and slow down the private sector. So the private sector needs to be energized. We've got to take the burden off. We can't be regulating and increasing taxes and expecting anything except the private sector to react in a way that they would contract rather than grow. And that's the lesson that we need to learn out of this before we'll ever see an economy with vitality in it again.
I should be able to cite this, and I'm sorry I can't. So I can't remember the article. All I remember was Steve King for president.
Well,
think of that.
It is flattering, and I am stunned.
See there? He's stunned. Michelle Bachmann, crazy, said he was stunning, and that, well, stunner, stunny, who knows? But they're reading each other's talk. Stunned. I'm simply stunned. Come on, Steve, you got a fabulous in you? That would be good.
As much as your wife?
Well, my wife asked me about that. She asked me actually last night, are you running for president? I said, well, we don't talk much, do we? But here's what I'd like to do, and that is, I want to be engaged in this national debate. I want to lay out the...
Oh, Steve, are you running for president? I want to be your naughty intern. we don't need that level of detail, Steve. TMI, buddy.
Parameters and what we need to do to refurbish the pillars of American exceptionalism. We've got to have a vision, and it needs to be offered...
Can I just say that I hate that phrase, American exceptionalism? American exceptionalism killed how many million innocent Vietnamese? American exceptionalism, as defined by the Republican Party, killed how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Iraqi civilians? How many untold millions has so-called American exceptionalism killed? Because American exceptionalism, as defined by the right wing, generally means lording it over the planet and acting like we're the only ones on it or anyone else is our little serf. And that's why I despise that phrase, because it's freighted and it's loaded and it has an odious meaning when you consider it as it comes out of the mouth of some godless, soulless, motherless, right-wing, repig-licking hypocrite like Steve King. But he's stunned. Oh, he's stunned, I tell you, stunned. And he can't wait for the throbbing hordes of teabaggers to converge on Washington and tell those damn liberals, well, we're going to fight for our freedom to die without insurance. That's what we're here for. We got our pitchforks and we got our torches, and we want you to know that we want you to keep your hands off Cigna and Aetna and let them continue to abuse us and send us that denial of coverage letter when we cough up the blood or when our wife finds the lump. We want them insurance companies to keep sending out them letters saying we're sorry, we don't pay. We're free to do that. We want our freedom. Moran. Oh, yes, oh, yes, oh, yes. It is Moran Monday. And I got a feeling that we're just going to have a high old time for the next 2 hours and 45 minutes or so. Because with over the weekend and Sunday talk shows, and we got Morans aplenty. That's why Moran Monday is Moran Monday, because over the weekend, the right-wingers come out on all the little TV shows where they're featured, and they just spread their moranness all over the broadcast spectrum. And now the morans have gotten onto Twitter. This was charming. Did you catch this? This goes back to Friday. Of course, I wasn't on the air. But this goes back to Friday when the White House voluntarily released its 500 visitor records of individuals who had visited the executive mansion between Inauguration Day and the end of July. It's a list that you can search quite easily, frankly. And there are names on there like Michael Jordan and Michael Moore. But then there were a couple of names on the list that sent the wing nuts into an absolute bat wing flapping frenzy, hopping up and down on one leg and then the other, and screeching and squealing and hollering and hooting, having an absolute freak out frenzy because of two names they saw. Two very terrifying names. Names of desperados that had visited the White House. That's right. They went into a full-on hissy fit when they saw the names of William Ayers and Jeremiah Wright. Michael Goldfarb of the Weekly Standard tweeted, "What a Friday afternoon news dump. I tried to warn you, America, Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers!" And then Mary Catherine Hamm of the Weekly Standard tweeted, Friday afternoon visitor logs have two visits by Bill Ayers, one by Jeremiah Wright. Yes. And then the Washington Times, you know, the newspaper that's owned by the self-proclaimed Messiah, Reverend Sun Myung Moon, the Washington Times jumped in, Amanda Carpenter, and she said, White House visits, Kim Gandy, 12, Immelt, 5, Bill Ayers, 2, John Podesta, 17, George Soros, 4, Andy Stern, 22, Trumka, 7, Oprah, 2, Jeremiah Wright, 1. And then there's some creepy right-wing blogger by the name of Ed Morrissey. And he tweeted, Jeremiah Wright has visited the White House more often than McChrystal and Petraeus combined. Oh, the indignity of it all. And it went on and on and on with the hooting and the hollering. There's only one problem. The William Ayers and Jeremiah Wright on the list aren't that William Ayers or that Jeremiah Wright. They're totally different people. I mean, it's a big country, and sometimes, just sometimes, the same name appears more than once. In fact, I'm told that there's more than one Bob Kincaid in the United States. But I'm a nice guy. I'll share. One of them, I'm told, is a rather hoity-toity fancy chef in Washington, D.C. But don't tell the right-wingers that. Don't tell the morons. Because it's so much more fun in their paranoid, bizarre, weird little upside-down, spider-web, cobweb-encrusted brains to think that there is a secret cabal and William Ayers and Jeremiah Wright came to the White House and Barack Obama gave them the secret handshake. They saw the big board. You can't let them in here. They'll see everything. They'll see the big board. Jeremiah Wright and William Ayers saw the big board. But you know how it is with wing nuts. They're just not very sharp. I love the thing from Michael Goldfarb. I tried to warn you, America, Reverend Wright and Bill Ayers! Do you suppose they issued correction tweets? Is there a protocol now for eating your words when you tweet falsely? Then again, these are right-wingers, so they probably didn't, because they just let their little acolytes go on and be stupid and misinformed and uninformed. And insofar as being right-wingers, they continually and persistently lie to their followers in the first place. How would this make any difference? You know, but coming to a grocery store, the bread aisle conversation near you, you'll hear it if you've just got your little ears perked up. You'll hear it. Did you see where Reverend Wright and William Ayers got invited to the White House and the White House admitted it? Can you imagine that? They don't respect us at all. They just slapped us in the face inviting that Jeremiah Wright. And of course, you know he's Muslim. You know, if you're in the right place at the right time, you know you'll hear that. You gotta wonder if right-wing radio corrected it. Probably not. Probably not. It happened on a Friday, so it's probably something that they just sort of let go by. Oops, got that one wrong. Shh, don't tell the rubes. Because they adhere to W.C. Fields laws much better than we do, one of which is don't smarten up a chump. Jeremiah Wright has visited the White House more often than McChrystal and Petraeus combined. That's only because them liberals, they hate America. Reverend Wright hates America. It's a pity he wasn't there. Oh, we do. We have morons oplenty this evening. And sometimes it's me who's the moron. Sometimes I look at words and they don't go into my brain the way they were written. I was over at thinkprogress.org and I saw this headline about the video interview between Chris Wallace and Flush Flembaugh. You know, the guy in Palm Beach who lives in a 24,000 square foot mansion with a cat. Yeah, that Flush. And the headline read, or what I thought the headline said, I should say. This was a moron moment of mine. I just glanced at the headline. And I thought, wow, they're getting a little ballsy over there at Think Progress. The headline read, Fox's Chris Wallace conducts syphilitic softball interview with Rush Limbaugh. What? Oh. Well, no, that's not syphilitic. That's sycophantic. But then again, I guess if you're sycophantic enough and in the wrong place at the wrong time, you can wind up doing a syphilitic softball interview with Rush Limbaugh. You got to remember, deafness like Limbaugh experienced can be brought on by late-stage syphilis. Just saying. Not saying he's got it, but it can be brought on. But that's the problem. There's so many potential causes. Rush Limbaugh's deafness could also have been brought on by his persistent and massive abuse of street drug narcotics. All that OxyContin he was sending his maid out to hustle and buy on the streets of Florida. So there it was, my moron moment. Chris Wallace conducts syphilitic softball interview with Rush Limbaugh. No, sycophantic. And it was. Oh, it was. Some of the questions that Chris Wallace asked of Rush Limbaugh, you know, he asked him everything, but Rush, tell me why is it that Barack Obama's a big poopy head? Everything but that. This week it will be 1 year since Barack Obama was elected president. In that time, what has he done for and to the country? Another question. You've now taken to calling Mr. Obama the man-child president. What does that mean? But you don't think that Barack Obama has a profound respect for our soldiers and the families that are giving the sacrifice? Do you think the individual mandate is constitutional? Do you think the government has the right to tell people you're going to get health insurance and if you don't get it, you're going to pay a penalty? To press my question, why aren't people turning to the Republicans? I think you're a great broadcaster. Oops, this may be, my misperception may have been, this may have been a syphilitic interview. I think you're a great broadcaster. How can you possibly be worth that kind of money? If he does win, how is Rush Limbaugh going to handle 7 more years of Barack Obama? My friend, I will laugh all the way to the bank. This is the best thing that's happened to my broadcast career in ages. Oh, yeah. Nice to see some professional journalism. Not. Yeah, just to give you a sense for the kind of garbage that was offered up as professional journalism broadcasting by Chris Wallace. And by the way, the photograph is just precious. They're both sitting there in their blue blazers, no neckties. Chris Wallace has a white shirt. Flush has a blue shirt. They're both wearing white pants down in that 24,000 square foot mansion with the cat. And Rush, for all his millions, apparently cannot afford socks. At least Chris Wallace is still wearing socks. But now, this from professional broadcaster Flush Flembaugh. Check it out.
When you look at Glenn Beck and you see this explosion,
yeah.
What do you feel?
Well, I feel I would like to slip up behind him in the middle of the night and slit his throat. That little punk is taking all of my mojo. No, sorry, he didn't say that. Asking, how rude. You know, it's just, I always felt bad for anybody being interviewed who gets asked, but, you know, let's say you're interviewing Ringo Starr and you, well, Ringo, that's great. Love the drums. Love Yellow Submarine. Tell me more about John. Don't! You know?
I'm kind of proud.
No envy, no competition.
No. I mean, My radio audience is astronomically high.
Oh, yes, they are. Nice to hear him finally admit it. They're astronomically high. They are whacked out of their minds. You know, years and years of listening to Flush will do that to your brain. But then when you factor in the other stuff, you know, the hallucinogens, the addicted, you know, the follow the leader syndrome with the OxyContin and stuff, they are. His audience is incredibly high. Any jealousy? I'm not jealous of the little rat bastard. No, he's a great guy.
Competition?
No. My radio audience is astronomically high. Look at 1988, there was nobody doing what I'm doing. Nobody. You had CNN was the only cable network, and you had the three networks and the newspapers. And now look what's out. All of this conservative media, conservative talk radio, television, Fox News, the conservative blogosphere.
Wait, did he just admit, did he just say that Fox News is conservative media? What happened to fair and balanced? Don't call him on it, Chris. He might have you taken out somewhere and, I don't know, treated like a little Dominican boy.
I could, if I wanted to have my ego be as big as Obama's is, I could say, look what I created. So any success out there on my side, conservative media, damn, if it's going to help us get this country back, bring more in.
Let's talk about you.
Chris, I hate to break it to you, buddy, but he was talking about him. Oh, this is just... If I wanted to have my ego be as big as Obama's is, Jesus criminy, this is a guy who gets behind the microphone and says, with talent on loan from God and half my brain tied behind my back. Ego? Ego? He just indirectly took credit for the creation of Fox News, the explosion of talk of hate-based right-wing talk radio. No, there's no egos at work here. Oh, heck no. Oh, and by the way, I'm informed by Marty there's even more than one Bill O'Reilly. The good O'Reilly writes technical books. See? But it was more and Monday was broadly peopled thanks to the for-profit media working it hard on the Sunday news shows. I mean, you've got, well, let's see, your old Lieberman is out there. And, of course, Chris Wallace and Flush Flimball. The interview transcript is just, I don't know. Get the tequila out before you start reading it. But certainly... Moran Monday would be incomplete without reference to Bob Schieffer. Bob Schieffer had David Axelrod on his program. And the false equivalence that Bob Schieffer created was nothing short of blood-curdlingly sickening.
What do you do to correct this kind of thing? You're told one thing, you'd have so much, and you didn't. These are the kinds of things we heard after Katrina during a previous administration.
Well,
are
Bob,
you taking steps to correct that?
Let's be clear. We're going to be caught up within a week. And I think we've been very, very aggressive on this situation. For the first time ever, people can go on a website and find out where to get the vaccine they need. They can diagnose their symptoms on the websites. This taken some pressure off of public health. authorities. We've gotten Tamiflu all over the country to deal with those who contract this, particularly the young. This is a serious, serious epidemic, one of the most serious we've faced in a long time. And I think if you measure our performance against the performance of past administrations in dealing with a situation like this, we come up very well. But the important thing isn't how we measure up. The important thing is how we deal with this problem moving forward, and we will have all the vaccine we need in very short order, and people should have some confidence about that.
I must say that there's
just once, you know, for all the right wing's references to, well, you know, these are Chicago style politicians, and that's just how it works in Chicago politics. You don't get mad, you get even. Just once, you'd like for David Axelrod or somebody else to look at one of these preening peacocks of the for-profit media. Did you hear that? Honest to God, did you hear that from Bob Schieffer?
Well, what do you do to correct this kind of thing? You're told one thing, you'd have so much, and you didn't. These are the kinds of things we heard after Katrina
He just compared a shortage of H1N1 Smithfield flu virus vaccine to the manifest epic fail of the Bush administration during Katrina. The deliberate, hateful disdain that the Bush administration showed for the people of the Lower Ninth Ward and the Mississippi Gulf Coast in its response to that horror. And Bob Schieffer just said that they're the same thing. And like I said, just once, you'd like to see one of these folks from the Obama administration actually practice some of that hardball Chicago politics. It'll never happen, but we can certainly fantasize about it. Wouldn't it be nice to hear David Axelrod say, "Why, Bob Schieffer, you miserable little pissant, how dare you even begin to suggest that the flu vaccine issue is the same as the hell on earth that George W. Bush and his cronies unleashed all across the Gulf Coast of the United States of America. If you were here, you little rat, I would..." You'd like to hear that. I'd like to hear that. I'd like to stop treating these people like they're something special. And as much of a squirrely type as he has proved himself to be, as much of a sycophant for the right that he's proven himself to be, bless his little heart, Juan Williams over at Fox News got it right.
Between Hurricane Katrina and government failure and what we're...
Back up.
I must say that there's a huge difference between Hurricane Katrina and government failure and what we're seeing here in terms of the delivery of the vaccine. This is a matter of private manufacturers not living up to promises, problems in terms of the delivery system. So that's something that you could say, you know what, the Obama administration might have foreseen it. They might have done a better job of preparing for it. But I don't think most Americans are blaming the Obama administration for this, as they blame that they said that President Bush's administration failed to properly understand or pay attention to what FEMA was not doing with regard to helping Americans with Katrina.
Hear, hear. So Bob Schieffer gets a little certificate suitable for framing, being one of the Monday morons here on the Horn. Nah, I'm not kidding. I wouldn't waste paper and ink on him. I am kidding. But what kind of callous disregard does it take for one of these preening peacocks to make that kind of analogy? What sort of morally sociopathic indifference to human suffering does it take? You know, these vaccines were bought, as Juan Williams pointed out, from the for-profit pharmaceutical industry. And once again, the for-profit pharmaceutical industry had America right where it wanted us. And we were once again
dancing to their tune and subject to corporate pharma's tender mercies. But that's okay, because a right-wing prostitute like Bob Schieffer is more than happy to try to score political points by comparing that corporate, not governmental, that corporate failure with the massive failures of the Bush administration. It goes on and on and on. Over the weekend, of course, George W. If we withdrew, it would cause the return of brutal tyranny in the nation. Can't see as how brutal tyranny ever left the nation, but then again, I'm not a globe-trotting genius like George W. Bush, Monday Moran. I guess he's still alive. I don't know. We'll catch him one of these days. Jesus Christ. And then, just to round out this Moran Monday, one of our favorite Morans, backed by popular acclaim, Representative Virginia Fox of North Carolina's 5th District, the Winston-Salem-Mount Airy area. Yeah, Mount Airy, the original inspiration for Mayberry, Mount Airy, Mayberry. Not too far from Pilot Mountain, Mount Pilot, remember? Nip it! Yeah. This would be Floyd the Barber's congresswoman. This would be Goober and Gomer's congresswoman. This would be, in that fictional world, Barney's congresswoman. Aunt B's and Opie's. And they were always such decent people. Not so with Representative Virginia Fox. Seeing as how a dim leader, we were just now talking about dim leader, talking about, I guess Osama's still alive. I don't know. Well, apparently he's not the only Repiglican out there who's lost interest in Osama bin Laden. He's lost a lot of cachet among a lot of right-wingers, one of whom happens to be Aunt B's Congresswoman, Virginia Fox.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Everywhere I go in my district, people tell me they are frightened. They are frightened about what is happening in this country. They fear for the future of our country.
Terrorism may rend our local Walmarts to smoking heaps of rubble. Wait a minute, no. No, everywhere she goes in her district, whether it's to Wally's gas station or to Floyd's barber shop or over to the dry goods store or down to the Bluebird Diner, people are afraid. What are they afraid of, Congresswoman Fox?
What they're talking about is that they fear for our freedoms, and they fear for the principles that formed this country.
That's right. They fear for their freedoms and our principles, because, you know, that's why they hate us. That's why Al-Qaeda hates us. They hate us for our freedoms. Dear leader told us years ago, that's why they hate us, for our freedoms. They hate us because we have homes. They hate us because we've got Xboxes and PS2s and 3s and Guitar Hero. They hate us for everything that makes us American. That's why the terrorists hate us.
And have always been the basis on which we've operated. I share that fear. And I believe they should be fearful.
Well, thank God Representative Virginia Fox is on duty and guarding us against them fearful terrorists.
And I believe that the greatest fear that we all should have to our freedom comes from this room, this very room, and what may happen.
What? Osama bin Forgotten's under your desk, Virginia Fox, right there in that very room? What?
And later this week, in terms of a tax increase bill masquerading as a health care bill. I believe we have more to fear from the potential of that bill passing than we do from any terrorist right now in any country.
Huh? Wait a minute. What happened to they hate us for our freedom and they're going to blow up the Walmart? I'm confused, Congresswoman Fox. What in the heck is going on here? There I was getting all worked up to be good. You know, you look at the two-year-old and you say, no, don't do that. And the two-year-old says, want cookie. Can't have cookie. Want cookie. Can't have one. And if you're like me, sooner or later, you want to explain and make this something rational. Forgot to mute the cell phone, I guess. And you say, listen, you know, you can't have a cookie right now because you had a cookie a little bit ago and you're only allowed one cookie. And the two-year-old says, want cookie! And pretty soon you realize that you are engaged in an act of fruitlessness and that of utter and abject and complete futility. And your only recourse is to take the cookies away, put the cookies out of reach, and frankly just ignore the cookie pleas of the two-year-old. If we are going to, and the point is this, if we're going to have any kind of public option, even one that only covers 6 million Americans, if we're even going to have that, it will only be when we finally get around to realizing that we just have to ignore the morons, the political two-year-olds, and do what needs to be done. And let America start getting well. CNS News did an interview with that old right-wing crank, Orrin Hatch. And he trotted out the silliness about how health care reform would be unconstitutional. Then he got around to calling it socialized medicine. But then in one of those delightful Dr. Freud moments, Orrin Hatch let the cat out of the bag. CNSNews.com, the right news right now.
Hi, welcome to this edition of Online with Terry Jeffrey. Our guest today is Republican Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. Senator Hatch was first elected in 1976. He's in his sixth term in the United States Senate. He grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, earned a degree in history from BYU, and graduated from the University.
CNSNews.com, fully funded, enough money to burn a wet elephant, and doing what they do to advance the right-wing agenda. Another case of something being created on an idea by the right-wing and the right-wing funders saying, hey, go forth and do it. Here's a lot of money. So this interview is long, shall we say. Like 33 minutes long. And I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna play all of it or subject you to all of Hatch's babbling and prattling. But about 20 minutes into the interview, he has a sort of a Freudian moment. And the question is put to, he says, that's their goal, move people into government that way. Do it in increments. They've actually said it. They've said it out loud. Question, this is a step-by-step approach? Man, you can't beat hard-hitting journalism questions like that one. Do it in increments. This is a step-by-step approach. Right you are! No, but Hatch follows and says the following. Pretty good word usage there, Bob. Hatch says the following. A step-by-step approach to socialized medicine. And if they get there, of course, you're going to have a very rough time having a two-party system in this country. Because almost everybody's going to say, all we ever were, all we ever are, all we ever hope to be, depends on the Democratic Party. In other words, if the American people get access to health care, they're going to like it. And they're going to remember that the Republican Party fought tooth and toenail to keep them from having it. And the Republican Party will disappear as a political force in the United States of America. You remember those stupid country first signs that they waved at all the McCain-what's-her-name rallies? And we realized that that was a Freudian moment, too, because what they meant was party first. Because what they always mean is party first. You know, of the party, for the party, and by the party. Party first, party last, party always. Well, there you have it. Orrin Hatch admitted it. Because almost everybody's going to say all we ever were, all we ever are, all we ever hope to be depends on the Democratic Party. At which point, either the libertarians or the teabaggers or whatever will replace the Republican Party as the second party in the two-party system. And I suppose it's true. The Republican Party, if you talk to their analysts, the ones, you know, get them good and liquored up so they'll talk honest-like, they'll tell you they know their days are numbered. These are the words of Ronald Reagan in 1961 as Medicare was being contemplated, what would become Medicare. And in talking about stopping it, 1961, Ronald Reagan said, "If you don't and I don't, one of these days, you and I are going to spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free." Same old argument, 61, 40, 48 years later, same stupid argument. You know, the minimum wage has gone up a little bit. Has anybody bothered to ask the U.S. Chamber of Commerce or any of those right-wingers whether that was the cause of the economic difficulties we're in? Oh, that's it. All those years, they said it was, if you raise the minimum wage, it'll kill the economy. Well, it finally did. Not by half. We'll spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. They have an odd definition of freedom, don't they? A truly bizarre definition of freedom. Where freedom is defined as the ability to enforce suffering. On the vast majority of the people of this country. That just kind of baffles me. I mean, I never was. I can't get my mind around the idea that I'm less free if I can go to the doctor when I'm sick. Because there are people all over the world in civilized countries who can do that, and they're not living in countries that we usually think of as being repressive, tyrannical dictatorships. In fact, some of the countries with universal single-payer health care actually rank highest in the Worldwide Happiness Index. Denmark? Anyone? Just asking? But it's all about freedom. It's all about freedom. And if we don't stop that terror, that it's not even communist. My God, did you hear Virginia Fox? It's not even communist health care anymore. It's not even socialist health care anymore. It's terrorist health care now. They've lost their minds. The Republican Party has jumped the shark. The problem, though, is that it remains to see if the Democratic Party will find enough spine to drive that home with the American people. I ain't betting. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. We'll be back after a little break.
At the breaking of the dawn, Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95? Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
So, that's the Moran Monday update. If you've got any you'd like to share, you know you are more than welcome to do so. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or, your own nickel, if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-3333. And in hopes that they were patient enough to wait through the break, we will go to the phones right now. I've got a couple of lines open if you want to go ahead and fill them up. But let's see who we've got just right now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Nothing much. It never ceases to amaze me how sometimes you have to agree with Alexander Hamilton. Maybe the people are not capable of ruling themselves. If people like Michelle Bachmann and that idiot from North or South Carolina?
North Carolina. Yeah, she's the congresswoman for Mayberry.
Yes, can get elected to Congress. Thank God there's a Senate for the voice of reason.
Yeah, no, well...
Of some reason, I should say.
Got to remember, that's the home of Joe Relevant Lieberman.
And also, even worse, what's his name from Oklahoma?
Which one, Coburn or Inhofe? They're almost equally insane.
Well, Inhofe advertises more, so I would say Inhofe. Yeah, it just amazes me how these people come into power
and stay there. Because it's a fair question, Kevin. I know what filthy corporate political contributions do to our political process, but sooner or later people do have to vote.
Exactly.
And what in heaven's name do you say about we understand that Michelle Bachmann is crazier than a sprayed roach.
Yeah.
But what does it say about the people who live in that district?
Exactly. and you, well, I don't forget, I've traveled, because her district is a suburb of so-called liberal St. Paul, Minneapolis.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have to question how liberal Minnesota is.
Or that particular little, but you got to remember that this is, you know, the gerrymandering comes in it to, into
oh, yeah.
it too.
Oh yeah. And again, it's just one of those things. At the end, everybody's subject to the vote.
Yeah.
You know, everyone is subject to the vote, so you have to question the rationale for much of America.
And, you know, whether, you know, what's wrong with people? Winston, I know, that's what, Winston-Salem, North Carolina? The Mount Airy area? I mean, you know what's in Winston-Salem, right?
Tobacco.
Well, yeah, but I'm thinking more like, I mean, that's rather of a little liberal bastion. North Carolina State, Wake Forest.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they call the,
The research triangle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It truly is.
You know, so you have to question the people at times. You have to question the people all the time. You know.
But when you question them, I mean, what is it? And I'm not trying to sound flip, Kevin. What's the question? You know, what? I mean, do you just want to grab them? I know I do. You want to look? You want to look at some of these districts? What's wrong with you people?
Well, the thing is, don't forget, it was the mob that put Hitler into office. It's the mob that put Napoleon into office, and it was a well manipulated. You know, they were well manipulated. Because there's machinery behind it that manipulates them.
Very true.
So, you know, there's something to be said about Alexander Hamilton.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's what he feared most.
But, you know, he was coming at it from a very elitist place, I suppose you could say.
Well, I understand that. That I totally get. And like I said, I don't totally agree with him. I just said there was something to be said. A misinformed public is a very dangerous thing.
Indeed.
And, you know, that is Fox News. A bastion of misinformation.
And apparently, as noted, Chris Wallace didn't mind Rush Limbaugh referring to that as conservative media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on, at the end of the day, they know who they are.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, speaking of Fox, guess what appeared in a marathon form again?
What?
Planet of the Apes.
You're kidding.
Once a week and then once a month a marathon, ever since Barack Obama won the presidency last year.
They don't... nuanced. They may claim to be fair and balanced. Nuanced, they're not.
Their movie network, and almost every month you can count on them. Every week you could count on them showing a Planet of the Apes movie or from the old series. And every month they have a marathon.
Yeah. And they've...
It's like, the sad thing is, I was a huge fan of Planet of the Apes. It's one of the great sci-fi, you know...
That's the thing. You know, once again, I guess if we're going to work the theme, it has to do with their inability to
their inability to separate reality from fiction.
Yeah, that is true. That is so true, but it's just sad.
Because, you know, and what I mean by that is, you know, that Planet of the Apes thing, you know, you had the playset and everything because it was toys and it was make-believe and it wasn't real. But for them, I don't know anymore. I don't know how tenuous is the right wing's grasp on reality, Kevin.
Well, it's not, because the reality is they're fighting a defeated. Well, conservatism in itself is a childish concept. Things can never remain as they were.
And what? They resent that, I guess. Or
exactly. You know, it's like I don't know if I shared with you. Like, my neighborhood is going through changes. Where it's becoming, in short, to make a long story, more and more whites are moving into the neighborhood because of the regentrification.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's still this segment of, you know, older African Americans who do everything tooth and nail to stop it. Okay, and, you know, and sometimes, of course, Reverend Al will get into the mix too. And to a certain degree, I understand, because a lot of these people are still caught in a certain time period where things are changing so fast, where if they don't slow it down or put a halt to it, it's going to make them irrelevant.
And I think they know that.
And deep down they do know it, because they're still, like, purposely, like, vacant, not vacant necessarily vacant, but dilapidated areas, which money could be used to invest, and they're like, well, no, we don't want to halt it. We want to halt it. And it's like, you know, you'll see beautiful blocks of brownstones and businesses and nice trendy restaurants, and you'll see blocks that look like it was bombed out. You know, kind of like what Harlem has gone through. And the thing is that they make a struggle for it every time, because they're like, anytime somebody wants to, like, develop the area and use the business, an area that's been long neglected for as far back as I can remember, and I've pretty much grown up around it except for those 5 years that I left, and they'll stop it. And it's the thing is, that's their fight, and this is the whole conservative movement, too. No. They're afraid they're going to become irrelevant. And that's why there's so much racism and bigotry of all forms in conservatism, because we're slow, not fast enough, but slowly heading to an era of humanity where race and religion and social class really doesn't mean anything anymore. It really doesn't. You know, I have neighbors here.
But apparently, it does mean enough in some places, like weird little corners of Minneapolis and Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to keep getting these loonies elected. You know, I'm sure it's got to matter wherever it is that Steve King is from, in Iowa.
Yeah. Well, the thing is also, you know, there's some very powerful interests that want to maintain the status quo. Okay, because like I said, you know, a few weeks ago we were talking about how, you know, technology can resolve a lot of things, and to the point where it wouldn't matter how much money you have in the bank account to live a fairly decent quality of life. And I sincerely believe that, because it's being done in Europe all over the place, and many of the Scandinavian countries. You really cannot tell who's a millionaire and who's not a millionaire, because pretty much looks, not looks the same, necessarily looks the same. Well, they do, because they're predominantly white, but pretty much everybody has the same lifestyle.
And isn't that the classless society that the United States is supposed to be?
Yeah.
So is the in the final analysis then, Kevin, what we're talking about here is the fact that when you boil it right down to the sludge that it is, right wingers are opposed to an egalitarian classless society, and they want some sort of royalism or titles or landed gentry or you know, getting back to your Alexander Hamilton reference.
Yes, absolutely, because, again, you know, for 200 years, yes, exactly. And don't forget, and it all goes, and what's so sad about the United, even more sad, particularly here in the United States, it is very primitive, for lack of a better word. It is so 5,000 BC what the foundation of it is. And it all boils down to race.
It always somehow seems to, doesn't it?
Okay, because the fact of the matter is, if you look to the ancient Rome, ancient Rome didn't discriminate because whether someone was black or white or whatever. They discriminated because you weren't Roman.
Well, that's true. Especially, you know, in the Republican period, it got the religious stuff came more to the fore during the imperial period, especially with the so-called persecutions of the Christians.
Yeah, but they didn't care, you know, what color you were. And it's the same thing in France. France, okay, they, you know, a lot of times people say, and it's a mistake, it's a big misconception, you know, the Arabs are an oppressed group, and, you know, people of Algerian and Moroccan or North African descent and French are discriminated. It's not that. It's because they're not French. It has very little to do with color because a lot of the French, prime example, fashion design, I think it's Pierre Cardin, he's half Algerian.
I had no idea.
Yeah, so it has very little to do with not being, you know, if you assimilate into their society and don't blow up anything or don't enforce Islam, or try to run that, then you can integrate fully into this society. It has very little to do with color or anything like that. Yeah, okay, there's always exceptions, and you're going to always have these ultra-nationalistic groups, you know, coming out. That you can't filter out. But for the most part, you know, as long as you're not, you know, if you want to assimilate, you can, regardless of color. Unfortunately, here in America, that's not the case.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Kevin, the idea, for instance, of interracial marriage is not that much of an issue?
It's not in most European countries. In England, it's more about class.
Which is, right, if you're just rich enough, that's what matters.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, there are plenty of wealthy, you know, Nigerian whatever who are married to English women, and they're looked upon in the same. And again, there are always exceptions because you're always going to have the knucklehead, skinhead, and light women, and most of them are just poor, desperate, out of work, working class white male. You know, just like here.
Yeah. But, I don't know how we, you know, that Reagan quote with the, we'll be in our sunset years telling our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren what it was like to be free. You know, what an evil bastard.
Oh, yeah, well, he's the one who put that thought in, the welfare queen, which was, you know, an attitude, a woman of color with an attitude, popping out children left and right. You know.
Yeah.
It, it's like...
Yeah, right. And it's directly contrary to all the facts, like, you know, the fact that most welfare is delivered to white folks.
Yeah, particularly white female.
Yeah.
Well, the whole issue is also, you know, besides race, is anti-woman.
Absolutely.
And it's probably more so anti-woman than race. A lot of this stuff is about woman control.
Sure.
And, you know, because the fact of the matter is, and I said this to a neighbor jokingly the other day, what's amazing to me around here, too, besides the regentrification that's going on, is the amount of Caucasian women married and having children with African-American males.
And, of course, that and that's another, you know, that just drives them around the bend.
Exactly. And it's like maybe it's coming to the point you guys have overplayed the race card to the point even your own women are getting tired of you, you know, saying that jokingly.
And the you know, the question is how America will deal with with frankly its changing complexion.
Exactly.
You know, I'm okay with it.
Well, yeah, and I know that. I've always known that. You know, it's just, and like I said, it's really not about race. It's compatibility, and compatibility has no real color. You know, there is no color to compatibility, you know?
No, not at all.
You know, I was married to a black woman, and we weren't compatible.
Yeah, no guarantees.
So race doesn't guarantee compatibility.
Not by any stretch of the imagination.
Exactly, but it's just one of those things where, and it works on both sides of the spectrum too. You know, a lot of black folks got to get rid of their issues also, you know, because you do have a certain segment, like Al Sharpton, even though I think he's a necessary, I view Al Sharpton as a necessary evil. You know, I really do. I don't particularly agree with him but, you know, he's the kind of person you're going to want around when stuff goes down.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the Godfather in the neighborhood, you know. He can get things done on a level that other people cannot. You know. But it's just, to me, I think what it's all about is irrelevancy. Because, you know, like I said, universal health care represents a lot of equality to a lot of people who traditionally don't have it. And that's usually women and minorities. Think about how many women who can finally not divorce their abusive or whatever, because now they'll have the financial freedom to get out of a loveless marriage.
Yeah. And, the legal freedom.
Yeah. So, you know, it's all those things you have to consider, you know, because it's amazing how many women out there are in marriages out of financial need and not necessarily love.
Without a doubt, the very definition of the so-called loveless marriage. You know, we'll stay in it for the children, and you wind up screwing up the children more than, you know.
Exactly.
Very true. Very true. Well, Kevin, I'm going to run along. Good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, you too, bro.
All right.
See you soon.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Kevin brings up a good point. And that is that, you know, there's a certain amount of responsibility that attaches to voting. And, you know, Michelle Bachmann, she was kind of won narrowly. Her crazy almost got her booted out of office. But you ask, you know, what's wrong with these people? And the thing is, those votes are coming from the churches. Those votes are coming from terrified white people. But, you know, people like Inhofe and Coburn, they win by landslides. It's not even close. And it's hard not to look at a state like Oklahoma. Sorry, Bart Kopp. But he says the same thing, too. You know, those people are crazy. They're just nuts. And maybe that's too easy to do. I mean, maybe that's the easy way out. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with being nuts. Maybe it has everything in the world to do with having been lied to for so long that, yeah, lo and behold, the big lie turned into the truth just like we were told it would. Maybe that's the reason. You don't know. But I suspect we're closer to the truth with that than we are with, you know, just saying, you know, it's in the water or those. No, it's the pernicious effects of fundamentalist religion. You know, how did the Taliban come to power in Afghanistan? Via fundamentalist religion. How did Newt Gingrich accomplish what he accomplished, taking over the Congress and ruining America to a degree that we're still paying for, back in 1994? It happened in the fundamentalist churches in America. Right? I would think so. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, I see you. Are you finally off the nitrous oxide from last night? That's okay. You still make sense. That's okay. Now, but what you're talking about right there is somebody was, I think it was last week, I think it was David or somebody was talking about, you know, don't worry about Sarah Palin, and I'm sitting there going, well, wait a minute. I wonder if 1990, 91, if you'd asked Jim Wright, are you worried about Newt Gingrich? He just said, no, it's a backbencher. He ain't got no power.
He's nuts.
Yeah, he's nuts. I mean, so like I say, just look at his or Tom DeLay's history. When you look at people like Sarah Palin and Fox Lady over in North Carolina, or Michelle Bachmann up in Minnesota, or Marsha Blackman here in Tennessee.
Ooh, forgot her.
Oh, yeah. Well, she ain't caught up to Michelle yet. She's still a trying. You know what I mean? She's the second best. She tries harder. You know how that is. But you know what I mean? It's like I say, you know, it's sort of the Whitewater thing, you know, where we talked about Gene Lyons, and he said, you know, so if we'd had the internet in the early 90s the way we have to now, they'd have blown Whitewater out of the water before it got started. Said, but most people just let it sit there, and you know, and nobody challenged it. And before long, well, by golly, we had a good 5 or 6 year investigation. That virtually kept the
$70-90 million. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. We get it. If you ignore them, then fine, they're going to come back and bite you. Just be set for that. I mean, you got to knock them down when they're standing up. You know. Let's see. You were talking about this too. I got a couple things here. Let's see. Well. Is the GOP going the way of the Whig Party? And, you know, I'm beginning to wonder, because I'm just wondering when some of these people are going to start telling them to quit giving money to the GOP and start giving it to the Conservative Party.
And that's fine by me if they shatter into a million pieces.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. It's one of those things, like I say, this thing now with this lady up at 23, New York.
Scozafava.
Scozafava. And supporting the Democrat. It's like, good. She looks at the landscape. She goes, "Look, but at least he's from here. This other guy, Hoffman, he ain't even from that district. He don't even live in that district." Which I'm just trying to figure out how he can run.
Yeah, it's not grassroots. It's grass tops.
I mean, you know. Well, apparently he went to some newspaper interview or something with the local news, whatever the big newspaper in the area is, and he would not talk details. He only talked generalities, and they realized he don't know what's going on in that district. You know, he has no real touch to it. He's just sitting there, you know, reading out of the he probably got an early copy of Going Rogue. He's just sitting there just reading the list of catchy phrases. You know.
Well, that's probably all it is. It's a bunch of buzzwords strung together with the occasional conjunction or preposition.
Okay. I'm gonna stay on too long tonight. Well, we see that Fox News proved their tough hitting questioning period with giving Rush 30 minutes with every once in a while a Fox puppet saying, "Are you sure, Rush?"
Oh, I know. I looked at the transcript of it. I couldn't bear to watch it. I can't stand to hear that voice.
I know. I can't. It's like get the Elvis gun time.
But you know the. Well, like I said earlier,
Puppet would have done better.
I saw the Think Progress headline, Luke, that said sycophantic, and for a minute there I thought it said syphilitic. But it works either way, really.
Yeah, I was going to say either which way will work for it. Let's see now. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. How many shots did it take Lou Dobbs to put the bullet in the attic?
You know, they go hunting up there.
It's the attic. Lou, were you and the wife up on the roof?
I think it was Jimmy Fallon who had the best take on it. Lou Dobbs reported shots being fired at his house. He did not see the shooter and wasn't there when it happened, but he did describe the shooter as being Hispanic.
That's about right. You know, I mean, here's CNN doing this whole thing. We love Latinos. You're putting them on behind every night, putting them on after an hour of Lou Dobbs. Like, does the word irony not anywhere in your all's dictionary, people?
Totally lost on them.
I know. Just okay. Let's see what. I tell you what. Somebody was talking about liberals. I tell you what. I still think the best one, and I've got to find it somewhere. I still think the JFK speech where he described being a liberal.
Yeah.
I think that's the best description of a liberal there is. And I think anytime somebody says, "Are you ashamed of being a liberal?" they ought to just play that and say, "Here, that's what we are. Damn proud of it."
Yeah, just everybody keep it tucked up. Keep that audio tucked away on your iPod or some such.
Oh, God, I say. Oh, another one. Well, we saw that. We saw the boys in South Carolina are having so much fun. They took, you know, so far, Sanford's off the bat. And the other one they had recently, he's off the bat. Now we have a member of the state attorney general's office. You see, that's got caught having lunch.
No, with who? Or what?
In a cemetery. With the 18-year-old stripper.
No, stop it. You are not allowed to fun on the talk host, okay? That did not happen.
So that guy's name is Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D, Corning, C-O-R-N-I-N-G. State Attorney General's office was caught in a cemetery with an 18-year-old stripper and Viagra and sex toy. They didn't go into describing which ones, but they were just having lunch, of course.
Would that cemetery happen to be out along the Appalachian Trail at this point?
Probably, yeah. I'd say so. It's moved a little bit on them. But apparently the police checked up on them and didn't arrest them because, you know, they weren't doing anything at the time. But amazingly enough, apparently he has been fired by the Attorney General. And you're just kind of sitting there going, you gotta wonder if some of the people there just.
So they went. I'm sorry. You just. This is like walking by and somebody just sticks their leg out and trips you. I'm crippled right now.
And the thing is, you saw it coming from 20 feet away. You still got tripped.
Cemetery, stripper, picnic lunch. Time of day? You wanna just make it a little worse? I mean, Halloween prank? What? When? Where?
I haven't got the story up right now. Let me see if I can back up here and do it.
S-C-A-T-T-Y General Stripper. Let's see if that gets us anything. Yeah, there it is. 5 days ago, Columbia, South Carolina.
There you go. You found it.
A deputy assistant attorney general who said he was on his lunch break when an officer found him with a stripper and sex toys in his sport utility vehicle has been fired, his boss said Wednesday. Roland Corning.
3-8-4-4 Halloween.
Yeah, 66. I mean, come on. A former state legislator was in a secluded part of a downtown cemetery when an officer spotted him Monday, according to a police report, yada, yada, yada. As the officer approached, Corning sped off, then pulled over a few blocks away. He and the 18-year-old woman with him, an employee of the Platinum Plus Gentlemen's Club, gave conflicting stories about what they were doing in the cemetery.
Well, they didn't speak in harmony.
Corning gave Wines a badge showing he worked at the state attorney general's office. That's always nice. Officer Wines, whose wife also works at the state attorney general's office, called her, "Hey, honey, you got a creepy old 66-year-old dude named Corning works at the office there with you? Oh, yeah, he's a real perv." "Okay, thanks, honey." He then searched the SUV, which raises issues of search and seizure. I mean, you know, honestly, I mean, you know me, I'm so liberal I won't take my own side in a fight. Where he found a Viagra pill and several sex toys. This is a classic. Cool. This is a beauty.
Okay.
Items Corning said he always kept with him just in case.
Yeah, I like that one. That was a good thing. And they're going, "Guys, can you tell us which ones they were?"
You know, I used to just laugh my fool head off at that little segment of film of W.C. Fields, Luke, where he'd say he had a golf bag. And the caddy reaches in and pulls out this fifth of liquor. And Field says, "Put that away. I keep that in case I see a snake."
I have a snake bite, yes.
Yeah.
He carries a snake with him just to make sure. Oh, no, it's one of them ones you just kind of sit there and just reading that, and you're just sitting there going, "This can't be South Carolina. Dear God."
No, but what I love is the response of South Carolina Attorney General Henry McMaster.
Oh.
He said, "We received credible information about inappropriate behavior Monday afternoon, and by the close of business, he was no longer working here." Now, here's the great one, though. "Such a trip to the cemetery," and here's the quote, "would not be appropriate at any time for an assistant attorney general."
Why?
What if it was a funeral? No. See, Attorney General McMaster, who I suspect is probably a pig licking, what you want to say there is taking your sex toys and your darling from the strip club to the cemetery is not appropriate at any time.
It's like, who knows, you may want to, it might have been an anniversary, somebody you know died. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going to the cemetery. It's a nice, quiet place. That's what it's there for, reflection. Oh, I tell you what.
Reflection or something else that rhymes with it.
Yeah, well, we'll go for
that. Not going there.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to say, we'll go for that for right now.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Oh, by the way, he worked on securities cases.
Oh, yeah. Which really put the
Yeah, I'm looking at the map here. I see where the Appalachian Mountains are, and I can't see as how the Appalachian Trail could possibly pass through Columbia, South Carolina.
It's an underground railroad. Sorry, my bad. Okay, first, now let me get on to one other thing before I go here.
I don't know if I'm going to be able to let go of this, Luke.
I know. Well, we'll get back to yours, my favorite conversation. What are y'all going to do the next 3 weeks in West Virginia? The Louisville? Cincinnati? Pittsburgh? Oh.
We might sneak past Louisville. Cincinnati.
Yeah, Louisville, yeah. But Cincinnati?
Cincinnati's going to beat us like we owe them money. And probably not much. We won't fare much better with Pitt. And, you know, that's a tough one to swallow, though, because I hate Pitt.
I understand.
But you got to remember Brian Kelly at Cincinnati was almost had the WVU job. When we hired our head.
I meant to ask, how do you like those articles I sent you for Michigan?
Oh, you mean about, what's his name?
The little investigation going on.
Yeah. You think the guy who was tossed off the team was the squealer?
Probably. It's the way it read, it sounded like, you know, sort of like, "We don't even want to screen, nothing to see here, move along, nothing else to see, everything's fine."
Yeah, you think he might have been handy in that Michigan, the butt kicking that went down, against the Illini? I mean,
no. Well, you ought to be around here. Our fun topic for the last 2 days has been, when are we going to wear the black uniforms again?
You know what? I was okay with the black jerseys.
I mean, for Halloween, you know, at one time of year.
Yeah, the team looked like candy corn.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? It's one of those things. Some of the people around here just absolutely just going hog wild. It's like, God, Lordy, take a drink. Sit down. Don't there's some of them wanted to burn them. The other half wanted to wear them every other week.
You know, I thought they actually looked kind of cool. I realize that's probably a heresy down there, but
it's about half and half. The young people think no, the old people think yes. So, you know,
the old people liked them.
No. I'm saying they're against them. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It's heresy.
Oh, okay.
The young people loved them. Because apparently, you know, I mean, apparently what happened was the players went to the athletic director and said, we want to do this. And that's why they let him do it, because originally he was against it. Earlier in the year they talked about it, and he was like, no, never, never. But apparently, like I say, Barry and, what was the quarterback? Maybe it's hard to think. They asked, said, please, we want to do this, at least for Halloween. So, because see, they came out for warm-ups in their orange.
Oh, yeah. I saw it all go down.
Oh, okay. You know, they did the warm-ups in the orange, then turn around and come back out for the thing in black. And I mean, oh, God, that place just about blew up right then. So, well, I see you all are going to be on ESPN 360.
Yeah, which I not get, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati, of course, will be on ESPN 2, it says here on the screen. And I'm sure the Pittsburgh game probably will be on something.
Yeah, I'm back to that place where I have to watch Mountaineer games with a blanket over my head and peep through the, you know, cracks between my fingers. It's just sad.
You know how it is. We're right now, we're just 4-4, so hey, we'll, you know, it's one of those things. We're feeling better. We're getting better, but still, you know, there's sometimes you're just sitting there going, well, couldn't you guys have played like this during the Florida game, please? But dear Lord, let us beat Tim Tebow like a drum. Please, why couldn't we have done it then?
Yeah. And
I mean, we play good, but I mean.
Well, but we all know the fix is in. I mean, everybody, you know, frankly, the rest of the SEC can go sit down, because it's been predetermined that, the championship game's going to be Florida and Alabama.
Well, you did see that Florida apparently had to suspend spikes for the first half of the Vanderbilt game. Oh, my God. Isn't that awful?
Yeah.
If you see that tape, you go, this wasn't poking. This was trying to dig his fist into the face mask.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you see that thing on YouTube, bigger Lord, he was going there trying to pull one of his eyes out. And, so that's the other hot topic right now. So they're trying to want to see if the NCAA or the SEC is going to say something. Apparently, Florida's already said he's not going to play the first half of the Vandy game, and all of us went, ooh. Because we saw what Georgia Tech did to Vandy this weekend, so that's not. Not a big real thrill.
Well, as David was telling me, it's a tough time to be a sports fan in Nashville right now.
Well, it's one of those things. They did real good for about the first half, and then Georgia Tech just wore them down. And I tell you what, Georgia Tech may not make it to the BCS.
But I'll make the early prediction that Nick Saban will once again refuse to adjust to anything involving a spread offense and lose to Florida in the championship game again.
Yeah, it's one of those things that they're Florida apparently is just coming alive at the right time. You know, they're getting their offense back firing again. And we don't know what Alabama's going to do, because, you know, they've had their week off, which I'm sure they really love. The Texas jumped them. I'm sure last night that sound I heard was Saban screaming. But we'll see how that winds up. Cause the one this weekend, of course, is the Alabama-LSU game.
Right.
Which will be the big game. So, otherwise, you have a good evening, bud. I'm going to get on out of here, let you get some other people on the air. And tell John, yes, to quit having the nitrous oxide, please.
I just wish I knew what that was.
I don't either. It just sounded like it was slowed up. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Frame rate or something, but, yeah, it sounded like we'd been pitch corrected.
It's not like you were running a 33 on a 45 or the other way, whichever way it is around, sort of. You know, you were sounding fine, but you just sound like you were talking sort of like this.
Yeah, well,
alrighty,
yeah, it was Halloween a day late.
Alrighty.
All right, later, Luke. Bye now. From East Tennessee, that's our buddy Luke, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob, it's Cassie.
Hey, Cassie, happy belated birthday, dear.
Thank you. Thank you. So I get this cool birthday present tomorrow.
Yes.
Like, for, you know, a political junkie. Like, I get to vote.
Oh, you do, don't you?
Yes. I registered like 2 months ago. You could register with your driver's license and stuff ahead of time as long as you were going to be 18 by the election.
Mm-hmm.
But there are 11 propositions. It's just propositions. We don't have a mayor race or anything like that. It's just propositions. And I can't find out any information. I mean, I can find a little bit. Like, I know what the propositions are. And I know that the Republican candidates for Senate are both in favor of one of them. So I'm probably against that one. Just, you know, on base rates here.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them, I can't find any information.
Do you have the do you have the text of them available to you?
Yes, but the way they're written looks like it. First of all, in order to even get on the ballot, it had to pass two-thirds of our state Senate.
Just the Senate or the Senate and the House?
Let me see. Probably both.
I would guess.
Okay, so it had to pass both. And they're both Republican.
Right.
Which tells you a little bit about them.
Yeah, that would have me leaning toward no.
Right. And then there's the fact that Governor Perry told us to vote yes on all of them. So that's amazing.
I'd say the choice is getting simpler and simpler.
Right. So they did early voting, which I couldn't do because I haven't turned 18 yet. So I have to do the regular voting. Only 1% of my county has voted, which is not a lot.
No.
1% of the eligible voters, not 1% of the whole county. But, like, there's this one that says that $500 million would be made available from the dormant higher education fund to be transferred into a new account and generate $25 million a year to help create new research universities. Well, that sounds fine, but it doesn't say why the fund is dormant. I'm like, is this the only option for the money? So I've looked at the Burnt Orange Report, and I can't find any other blogs that are even writing about them. I mean, I hear you talking about an informed electorate. Like, I had to do digging to even find out what we're voting for tomorrow.
Oh, without it.
And now I know the names of what I'm voting for, but I don't know what anything is.
Well, all I can suggest is that I would guess there would have to be a sample ballot online, and I mean, there's bound to be some good liberal blogs in Texas.
Yeah, I could find them.
But, you know, under the circumstances as you described them, Cassie, it was passed by two-thirds majority in both houses, and both houses are controlled by Republicans. That's a big red flag.
Yep.
The governor wants them. That's a big red flag, because he's a miserable right-wing. Remember, he's the one that's thinking about seceding.
I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, you are so getting out of there, Cassie.
I'm getting out of here.
before they fire on the Alamo or something, you know, to declare their independence or whatever. Yeah, you want to. How's that coming?
All of my November 1st stuff I sent in on October 28th, and now I'm working on the stuff that's due November 15th. I'm still getting calls to interview for universities that I haven't even applied to for, just because they're seeing my SATs and they're seeing my class rank, and they're calling me.
Any of them that you find interesting?
Princeton seems to be the most interesting.
You could learn to like New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm going to actually see it Thanksgiving week.
Very good.
They don't start their Thanksgiving until the afternoon of Wednesday, and we're off the whole week.
Any Harvards, any Yales, Browns, et cetera?
Dartmouth,
yes, we talked. Yeah, right.
Yes. Harvard, I looked at Harvard. It feels like it's too big and like Boston's too big.
Yeah, but even big cities are small towns when you get right down to it. Have you taken a run at Williams?
I've looked at it. I've looked at it, I'm not sure.
Williams, Amherst, that bunch, again, well, I know that over in Williams Township, you would not feel like you were in a big city because you really, really aren't. And it's as beautiful a chunk of countryside as you're ever likely to see. You know, they're in the Berkshires and just exquisite. And you know, just a magnificent learning experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am looking at it. I'm looking at a lot of things. I mean, if I get accepted everywhere, I'm not going to know what to do. Or if I get rejected everywhere, I'm not going to know what to do.
Well, you're not going to get rejected everywhere. You're going to get accepted at more places than you imagine. I would suggest, however, you know, this is me, but I just think you're going to thrive in a small liberal arts environment.
Yeah, that's
so,
what I'm looking.
You know, so something like Williams, Sewanee down in Tennessee, Oberlin in Ohio.
Oberlin's on my list.
What about why do I always forget this one? The liberal arts college up in Maine. There's Middlebury in Vermont.
How many pairs of gloves are you sending me?
Pardon?
How many pairs of gloves are you sending me?
Oh, and a parka too. Oh, come on.
I know.
Now we'll send you snowshoes.
I'm going to need them.
But, you know, it's great civilized, you know, I have a great love for Vermont because it's so doggone civilized. And Middlebury's a darn good liberal arts college. You're not in the chat room. ELO has gotten you a link into on about the ballot in Texas, and Sophie is telling you that you know she doesn't want to go from Texas climate to Maine right off the bat.
Maybe for the summer.
Bowdoin, that's the one in Maine. Bowdoin.
Yes.
Are they on your list?
Yes. A lot of it, the question is going to be what happens with financial aid.
Right.
Because some of them guarantee that if your family income is below a certain amount, that you will qualify for financial aid. You will qualify for enough financial aid. Some of them guarantee it, but not all of them do. And, I mean, I can get student loans, but
you want as few of those. You want as few of those as you possibly can. Oh, and there's Guy James in the chat room. Small liberal arts school has to be the Ohio State University. Oh, what a Buckeye he is!
The opposite.
Yeah, a little bit. Kind of big.
Yeah. University of Texas is big.
Yeah. You know, I don't see you as being somebody who's gonna be really concerned about the quality of the football program for where you go.
No.
And you know, Williams, you know, they've got a football program. They're the purple cows. You gotta respect. Yeah, they're the Eefs. And Their mascot is a purple cow. You know, I've never seen a purple cow. I hope I never see one, but I can tell you here and now I'd rather see than be one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they're the purple cows.
I like that.
But, you know, Williams, Amherst, that bunch, yeah, good schools.
Anyway, so I just wanted to call in and I just say, like, I missed you last week, that I get to vote tomorrow.
Well, I'm so proud of you for taking it as seriously as you do. We all are. And we continue to look for great things from you.
Thanks. And I got new leather boots.
Ah, new boots.
New boots.
Yeah, for going up no for boots. Going up to the frozen wastelands of
no,
Princeton?
No. For walking around.
Oh, nice. Oh, like nice fashion stylish type thing boots.
Yes.
Yeah, I noticed that they're all the rage when we were in D.C.
They are. They're really cool.
Yeah, it seemed like all the women were wearing, you know, and they're like, you know, I guess they come up to just below the knee.
Yeah.
Black. Yeah.
No, brown.
Oh, you went brown. Okay.
Brown.
Everything, all the boots I saw were black.
Uh-oh.
So you would definitely stand out in the crowd in D.C. But everything from little chunky heels to little spiky heels, I mean, yeah. Big, big boot season. So,
all right.
And I'm trying, there's no universities you want to go to in D.C. Nah. Well, you know,
no
keep us posted.
Where?
No universities you want to go to in D.C. You know, there's Georgetown, but, you know, religious.
Yeah. I'm thinking that I might want to do, like, a summer program.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington. Or.
Oh, and Kenyon College in Ohio is also being mentioned by Guy James.
Oh, I don't know that one.
I think hand in hand with Oberlin, yeah, liberal arts, small, excellent.
Okay.
But it gets cold there too. You do have to bear that in mind.
It gets cold in most places. I'm discovering that.
It does. You've been spoiled by your upbringing in Austin, I fear.
Yeah. Well, you know that.
Okay. I knew I recognized Kenyon College. That's Paul Newman's alma mater.
Oh. Okay.
So another one to think about. Well, Cassie, great to hear from you, and I hope you have some luck. If you pop into the chat room, I'm sure ELO will give you the link again. So, you know, read it all, be careful. But
I have the sample ballot. I just don't completely understand whether it's written in Clean Skies Initiative talk.
Well, just bear in mind that Republicans apparently wrote it, so they're going to make it as confusing as humanly possible so as to get their way.
Yeah. So how come the newspapers and the TV station and stuff, why don't they have stuff on?
Well, I would imagine that in the last couple of issues, maybe Sundays or Mondays, if you look, what is it, the Austin American Statesman?
Yeah.
I would imagine that they...
their website, they just have a description of what is on the ballot and a little bit about who's supporting which one. They don't have any endorsements.
Well, I would think maybe the Houston Chronicle or the Dallas Morning News or some of them are bound to have endorsed it or recommended against them. And based on the political leanings of the newspaper, you could garner some ideas that way, too.
Okay, how do I know the political leanings of the newspaper?
Take a look at their op-ed page. You'll figure it out pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Cassie, take care, dear.
Bye.
All right, bye. Happy birthday. It really is as if we have watched Cassie grow up. Wow. She's 18 now. Amazing. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, I'm calling in from the Horn Gondola on the Andes Mountains. This is awesome. Membership privileges, baby.
What's up, David?
Where to start with? Well, I guess I'll take on what Luke was saying about the Sarah Palin. Well, I would want Luke to keep in mind of the fact that the fact that people mention her as a keyword, she wins. It's just like in music. If someone mentions you, doesn't matter if it's negative or positive, they win. And we'll see this November when they're going to culturally brand her in ways that we haven't even begun.
Well, see, that's why this New York 23rd thing has such relevance. Because Godzilla from Wasilla and Glenn Beck and that whole filthy crowd managed to run the nominated Republican Scozafava right out of the race in favor of this person who calls himself the conservative party candidate.
I understand completely, but what I'm getting at is the fact that when these people do arise, our first reaction should be, well, so what? They have no credibility, and then move on to another topic. But we don't do that. What we do is we pump up the fear. I'm sorry, people, but it's true. We pump up the fear like they're out to get you. They're going to eat your children. And it makes them bigger than life. And then what do? And then we end up talking to them with our family, with our friends, with associates, everywhere we go, because we've just basically plastered them out there. And I'm not saying you or Luke or anything like that. I'm saying, in general, the people who have who can get the noise out, the loudest on that. Because I got to tell you, Bob, and it's true. It's true. People, you have to listen to this. It's true. Sarah Palin would be less where she is now if no one got outraged and just said, what's the point? She doesn't have any color. She doesn't have any zip. She has nothing to offer. But instead, I type in Sarah Palin on the Google people, and she won because she's everywhere. We're still talking about her. She's like the Republican Britney Spears, for God's sakes.
You'd almost think that she was said to be hidden in the balloon, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's my main point about all of this, is the fact that when we do have these people who are just brought out on the reins, I want a lot of people to learn the lesson of, you know, this country is effing falling apart.
But I think it's okay to talk about her if you are talking about her and describing what a nut job she is.
Oh, it's okay for you and everyone else to talk about her, but what I'm saying is the people on the left who have real power and exposure in the media, we got people dying in this country, we got people starving, we got people getting thrown out of their houses, for God's sakes. And none of that is really being reported. And when you take time for a buffoon like this, you're taking up. You're actually just buying into the hype factory that it is, the fear factory that it is, and you're helping promote the fear. Now, again, I'm not talking about you or Luke or anything like that. What I'm talking about is the people who have that branding iron, Bob. That's the most important point for people to understand that. The same way it works in hip hop, people. It works in politics. As long as the name is out there, that's all that
happens. There is no such thing as bad publicity, absolutely.
Right. So as I'm just watching the latest news and the way everything is coming down, I just want to say this. I think I'm with you on, I don't know if you are a real fan of Submedia, but I'm a big time fan of Submedia. And I think they have pretty much nailed it.
Oh, I was watching. Submedia.tv yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And this administration, if I anger some people, I don't care. We got Velcro fascists in office right now, people. We really.
Do you love the stimulator or what?
Yeah, yeah. I love everything about that site. And I hope the police, the NSA, the FBI, they're all watching it. And they all have this sense of fear that's like, wow, I hope this guy does not get the big traffic numbers because, well, you know, there is that, there is a paranoia on YouTube. Now, I don't know if it's true, but a lot of people say that they're moving the counter on a lot of these videos
So if you ever wonder why your coal mining video is, now I don't know who would be moving the counter. Maybe you can pay to have a bribe to move the counter back or something. But there are screenshots, and I just thought I'd mention that in case people are ever wondering why these videos may not be getting the traffic, or why you might have seen a number that was bigger than before, and all of a sudden it disappeared. This is a common thing that's happening, so I just thought I'd put that out there.
I wonder if they could be rolling it back for because people deliberately, continuously hit a video from the same IP again and again and again.
I think it has to do with this, and I hate to say it, but when you have a video that's politically controversial, whether I guess it's from the left or the right, anything conspiracy or grand scheme, a lot of people get nervous, and I don't know who would want to pull back the numbers, but it seems like that's what's happening in a lot of cases, and you can. The way you can kind of gauge that is if you look at like a comments of one of the videos I was looking at, and one of the particular videos, I won't name what it is, but one of the particular videos I was looking at had like 5,000 comments, Bob, and it was like, some lame number like, I'll put it to you like this, like 10,000 views or something like that, and it had been up for a day. And it doesn't really make sense because the probability plays into this, people. Let's do some mathematics. How many people actually leave comments on a video that are numbered 5,000 when you have X amount of views? It's some basic arithmetic.
Statistical likelihoods, yeah.
Yeah, it's the likelihood. And what I'm saying
unless,
is,
of course, it's leave Britney alone.
Yeah, there you go. Unless it's that, yeah.
I learned something this past week, David, about the power of this, the apparent power of this new media and tweeting and so forth.
Right.
And I got to get better at it. There's no doubt about it. But I attended a protest at the EPA headquarters in D.C.
Mm.
And it was really exciting. We had 13 young people who went in and risked arrest and sat in until someone came down from the communications department and heard their grievances. And while it was going on, people were tweeting like mad. And then by the following, or by later that evening, I think it was. Yeah, it was later that evening. I got a note saying that a search, and I forget exactly what the search terms were, yielded 9,000 hits or 9,000 references or linkages or whatever for the story about our protest in D.C.
Wow.
And it was pretty astonishing. You know, AP picked it up. New York Times picked it up. It was hard to ignore. Because the message was pretty significant, and the neat thing was it was all very nicely laid out. Because at the same time it was going on in D.C., there were protests going on at every other EPA regional office in the United States, as well as J.P. Morgan Chase.
Mm. Well, speaking of getting out the message, how is the horn doing on funds? Any updates on that?
Well, you know, it's the second day in November, so it's kind of hard to say. We did reach the threshold for Maura's matching contribution, which was refreshing.
Well, that's good.
And we reached October's fundraising goal. So that gave us a little bit of a breather, but you know, we're off to the races again for November, and it remains to be seen how that will pan out.
I think as long as we put the pressure on in various ways and we keep mentioning it on the program, I think you will meet the monthly goals. I encourage people to continue to talk about it when you do get on the air about it, because I think it is important for people who may not be just listening to the whole program. They may just be listening to like 15 or 20 minutes. And you never know who you reach with that, with the message that you put out there. So I would encourage that. The last thing I wanted to say before I jet on out of here was I did want to mention the fact that I think you should play that video that just hit the web today on David Vitter.
I've got that. You mean his conversation with the rape victim?
Yes, his conversation with the rape victim. I think people need to.
Well, before you jet, you wanna join me while we do that?
Okay, sure.
Yeah. What Dave is talking about is just a little bit of background. You know that last month Senator Al Franken proposed an amendment to the 2010 Defense Appropriations Bill that basically said to a defense contractor, listen, if you prevent your employees from taking workplace sexual assault, battery, and discrimination cases to court, you can't get contracts. And the amendment passed, and 30 Republican senators voted against it, one of whom was Diaper Dave Vitter from Louisiana. And, you know, this guy, well, to say that he has a poor track record in regard to women's rights is mighty weak speech. He rises or descends, as the case may be, almost to the level of, if not entirely to the level of misogynist. And he, you know, he basically voted to protect companies protect defense contractors and allow them to discriminate against rape victims. You know, what? Wow. What kind of no moral compass whatsoever do you have when you do that? So, on Halloween, on October the 31st, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, David Vitter was confronted. And, well, let's let the audio speak for itself. This is, I'm glad you reminded me, David.
All right.
Senator, I'm a rape victim. I need to ask you for a
credit card number because all these things have a lot deeper, a lot more image than what I'm doing.
I'm a rape victim. And it meant everything to me that I was able to put the person who attacked me. And what allowed me to do that was our judicial process. I showed up at court every day to make sure that happened.
And I'm absolutely, supportive of any case like that.
But they are rape victims that are being
silenced. To the full extent of the law.
And
nothing in that amendment prevents criminal.
How can you support a company that tells a rape victim that she does not have the right to defend herself?
Ma'am, the language in question should not say that.
But it's unconstitutional to have a law that says a woman does not have the right to defend herself.
You realize President Obama was against that amendment and his administration was against that amendment.
But I'm not asking Obama, I'm asking you.
Do you think he's in favor of rape?
I am asking you, Senator.
What about the woman with cancer?
What if it was your daughter that was raped? Would you tell her to be quiet?
What about the woman with cancer, Senator?
Thank you, Senator.
You tell her to be silent.
It's her chance to actually get something.
Wow. No good answer. It didn't have much of an answer, did he?
No, he didn't have much of an answer, and I did catch something watching that video of how fast he walked away from the circle of cameras to the other side of the room.
Oh, he was trying to get away from her for all he was worth.
Yeah, and there was no other and he saw that there was a fact that there was another cameraman, and he just wanted to placate to that quote unquote YouTuber or whatever he thought that cameraman was a part of. And I found it kind of interesting, the fact that I would like to think, in the case of Obama, since I'm an equal opportunist critic, I would say that Obama probably didn't read the bill, which is probably an excuse. But
well, the fact of the matter is the Obama administration has, the Defense Department. Let's not say the Obama administration. It's the Defense Department. And you know, and I know, David, that the Defense Department acts almost as a law unto itself, right?
Right.
And it was the Defense Department that opposed it and raised concerns about the reach of the Franken Amendment. According to the White House itself, well, this is the quote from the White House. While the Obama Defense Department raised concerns about the reach of the Franken Amendment, the White House itself said it supported the intent and was working to make sure it was enforceable. so they don't oppose this amendment.
Mm.
The Defense Department has concerns about the reach of it. But, you know, that even sounds a little bit bogus, David, because how can you have concerns about the reach of an amendment that simply makes it clear that defense contractors cannot deny people who are injured on their watch access to the courts?
It seems like it's another case of making, crowning someone above the law so they don't have to deal with, I hate to be this cynical, but so they don't have to deal with the political red tape. And they just think it would just be a legal, which they're probably right in a lot of cases, a legal bureaucratic hell. And these cases would go on and on and on, and which raises the question of the fact of it looks more and more like, we've said it before, it looks more and more like we have illicit activities that are co-signed by Democrats and Republicans, continuing to be, saying that they're going to do something for change and fix Washington. We've heard that line before, and it seems like no one wants to touch these issues. Is in of how people like Chuck Todd and David Gregory talked about how long this would take to sort out, and how nothing would get accomplished, and they like to throw that out there, which probably does have some merit to that, and it seems like a lot of the politicians have bought the same line as well. It looks like contractors do get to have their cake and eat it too, and it looks like the Obama administration, I'm siding with Submedia, I think we are in a police state. I think the Obama administration...
Well, it's hard to argue with that position when you see, you know, the black-clad riot police with no name, no badge, no number, no means of identifying them, with their faces hidden behind masks, with shields and clubs. Yeah. You know, a guy or woman, whatever, in Pittsburgh getting arrested for... I don't know, cell phoning with intent?
By the way, how insane is it? I don't know if you caught this case. Did you see the verdict for the woman who killed her pimp? A prostitute that killed her pimp?
No.
She got life, Bob.
What state?
She's a teenager at 13. Go to Raw Story right now. It's like almost the bottom line right underneath the...
I love Raw Story, but I have a real hard time getting it to load sometimes.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll send you the story and you can look at it. She's only 13, Bob. Only 13, and she gets life in prison for killing the man who raped her? I mean, come on! I hate to be Mr. Outlaw Justice, but to me, she did the right thing. What was she going to do? Help! Help! My pimp is trying to kill me. Can you help me with some legal legislation? I'll fill out the forms. I hope he doesn't kill me by the time I fill out all of these forms and we get a proper trial going. But I'll fill out the forms and I know I'll get some sort of... See, that's where you have to understand. That's where people have to understand. In situations like that, the court needs to understand this, too.
Okay, I've got the story here, and I've got another one that I'd meant to mention as well.
Yeah.
And it goes along with some of what you're talking about, David. Headline, court rules victim of extraordinary rendition can't sue. A Canadian citizen who was wrongly identified as a terrorist suspect and reportedly tortured in a Syrian prison for nearly a year after U.S. authorities sent him there has lost his bid to sue the U.S. government. The judges of the Second U.S. Court of Appeals ruled 7-4 that Meyer Arar, a Syrian-born Canadian engineer, cannot sue the Justice Department because the lawsuit would offend the separation of powers and inhibit this country's foreign policy.
You see, that's what I'm talking about, Bob. This is exactly why we have a situation that we do, because it's these dead ends. What is the woman? I'm looking at the details of this case right now, and it says by age 13 he had raped her. For the next 3 years, she worked 12-hour days. Well, no wonder she shot him or knifed him or whatever. She was sick of it. God, man, I mean, the fact that...
Wow, does this mean that the girl who was kidnapped and then repeatedly raped by her kidnapper, gotten pregnant, and kept hostage in hiding in California, would have gotten life as well?
You know what? She should get life too. Put her in the slammer as well. If we're going to work under these tenets of the law, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say anymore. But I mean, if this administration and people in our law system don't realize that this is, to me, it's obviously it's a moral crime to me, times 1,000. And I think there's something to be said of where you have to let bygones be bygones in this case. And I would say that, yeah, she probably killed him because she was going insane and she wanted to get off the streets. How do you like those apples, Mr. Judge? And, you know, Bob, it boggles the mind because a girl like this is going to go to life. She's going to go to life, people. A life.
Well, yeah, the quote from her, my judge told me that I lacked moral scruples.
Oh,
and she said she didn't know the meaning of the words. Then she said, life without parole, however, I know what that means. It means I'm going to die here.
If she gets life, Bob, I think... You know who should get life too? Rumsfeld, Cheney.
Yeah, right.
Bush. Just keep naming. We don't have.
Wolfowitz. Yeah, we don't have time to do the litany.
Yeah, so there's not much to say in something like this. Can we get Judge Judy and Judge Brown on this case?
It sounds as though they would do a better job.
Yeah. Well, Bob. I hope
this isn't some sort of, she's described at 11 years old, middle school student, Riverside, California.
Oh, boy.
She had severe bouts of depression as a child, but she was a good student and overachiever, in her own words. She had the misfortune, however, of having an abusive mother who was addicted to drugs and a father who she'd only met a couple of times. And was not in her life, and that's when this guy came along and groomed her to be a prostitute, a child prostitute.
I hate to be ultra cynical, but you know where my mind goes, Bob. Is she Hispanic and Latina?
Cruzan?
I don't know.
Sarah, S-A-R-A, Cruzan, K-R-U-Z-A-N.
I'm just saying, if she is of Latina or Hispanic descent, or anything like, you know, I hate to put something like that. Oh, she's black. That's just as bad. It says African American youth are serving sentences at a rate of about 10 times that of white youth. Wow, does this strike as? Oh my God, that puts another spin on it altogether. Did the judge put this because she was a immoral, multiracial.
Well, what the alternate story points out is that next month, the Supreme Court of the United States will hear arguments in two cases, Sullivan versus Florida and Graham versus Florida. And at issue in both of those cases is whether or not a life sentence for a juvenile violates the cruel and unusual punishment proscription ban in the United States Constitution.
All I can say, Bob, is this is insanity. This is insanity that we even entertain these notions. Sometimes there are these moments, people, where you have to look at the bigger picture and see, okay, this woman, she was being raped multiple times. She gave this guy chances one after the other. I'm not surprised that he was killed.
No.
Good for her. God sakes.
But, and the alternate story goes on and documents other people in similar circumstances. A guy named Joe Sullivan.
Yeah.
Mentally disabled, was 13 years old in 1989 when he was accused of raping an elderly woman after a burglary carried out by an older group of teenagers. They hung the other teenagers hung the rape rap on Sullivan. He was sentenced to adult maximum security, and he was repeatedly raped.
This goes right into...
Beginning at age 14, he's 33 years old, and he's in a wheelchair from multiple sclerosis.
This goes right into what we were talking about, the privatization of corporations, corporatization of America regarding prison systems, and having to have that high, extreme level of prosecutions every time by
it's the David, it's the punishment fetish. It is America's punishment fetish.
And it's a business that can't be stopped because they need to meet their bottom line guilty. So I guess it's not. It's profit in a way, but...
Prosecutors who are elected live in fear.
Yeah.
And the fear that they live in is that if one of these juveniles gets treated as a juvenile and goes out and commits another crime, then whatever party that person's in, there will be an opponent from the other party who will plaster... that defendant's, that perpetrator's picture all over the county and say, the incumbent is soft on crime. Looky here. And it's sickening.
And it's made even more sickening when people tell you that the law is just, the law is fair, and they don't see that there's case after case across America since the creation of this damn country that people have gone through, and we paint it in such a history revisionism from so many people. Even Democrats have done this too, not just Republicans. And we really need to have that sit down and talk, Bob, and realize that this whole legal system is rotten. I don't think you can salvage a lot of it. And there needs to be something done about it. And yes, lots of people need to be, for God's sakes, free. We need a universal prison system.
Well, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people who don't need to be. There are a lot of bad people in this world and in this country. And frankly, when we tie up our prison system... imprisoning people of limited mental faculties, or imprisoning children. Sarah Cruzan is 32 years old now.
Wow.
Okay. When we waste space in the prison system on them, we make it more likely that the bad guy's gonna walk. And I'm no Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. There are bad, bad people out there. Unfortunately, a lot of the bad, bad people are called successes and leaders, when actually they're nothing more than garden variety sociopaths and psychopaths. Donald Rumsfeld comes to mind. Dick Cheney comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know, here's Dick Cheney, whose FBI transcript was released. Did you see this?
Yes, I saw it.
What was it, 72 times he couldn't remember? His memory is apparently getting as faulty as Ronald Reagan.
Well.
I have no specific recollection of that instance of that occurrence. If I remembered it, I probably would forget it anyway.
That's how you know the system is completely gone. When you can't, when Cheney hasn't even been sat in a courtroom and told how many... times he's violated the law.
Or when a guy who was mistakenly shipped off to Syria to spend a year in a grave-like cell and tortured every day of his life for things that he had absolutely no connection to, based on bogus information from the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. that was passed to the United States government who yanked the guy off a plane and sent him for a good torturing.
I think the reason why a lot of people don't get involved in these issues, part of it has to do with an unemotional disconnection, but also part of it has to do with it's an extremely complex and weighty issue that takes not hours, months, years to sort out through all the labyrinth of bureaucracy on all of these cases and what to do now. It's almost like, I hate to say it, but it's almost like we should have just kept the terrorists to the special ops and gave them a X amount of money and just kept that there and said, this is how we're going to treat. You guys can go sniper who you want in the mountains if they are said terrorists. But as far as rendition and any of that thing is concerned, we can't afford that as this country.
It's got to be fixed. But, you know, we're not going to fix diddly while we're out there worrying about Balloon Boy or Britney or dancing with the Morans.
That seems to be the problem. Well, anyways, Bob, I'm going to let you go. And
Well, thanks. Always, thanks for the heads up on both of those, David. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Things like that really concern me if we really do have a legal system in the future that we can fix. I'm still have a question mark.
I know, and it's being pointed out to me now that Alberto Gonzalez couldn't remember almost exactly the same number of times that Cheney couldn't remember. You think they got together and figured out what it was they couldn't remember?
I think we know the condition. It's corrupt Republican dementia.
And I'll bet you horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner will get right on that.
You probably can diagnose it right away.
David, you take care.
All right.
Bye now. Calling from Maine, pop culture correspondent David. Oh, lost the last call. Go to Alternet. It's under the rights and it's under the human rights tab. 16-year-old got life without parole for killing her abusive pimp. Should teens be condemned to die in jail? And cases like this, you know, there's a saying you hear somewhere along the way that hard cases make bad law. But you know what? So do bad judges. And so do bad laws. You know, the heart and soul of so much injustice in this country has stemmed from these god-awful three strikes laws. I know of one case where a guy is doing life without, won't be eligible for parole until he's 87 or some such, and you don't live to be 87 in prison very often. And his third strike was stealing a $4 package of socks. But it's so easy for a prosecutor to misuse a law like this because he can then go out on the stump and say, look here at me, I'm tough on crime. I'm protecting you, Merca, or whatever county or whatnot. And we simply take someone like a 13-year-old girl and stick them in the criminal warehousing system and forget them. Or maybe they're sentenced to death and some jug-eared, pig-eyed little governor will at some point in regard to requests for clemency, not let me out, please, just please don't kill me. Maybe that pig-eyed, jug-eared little governor will sit in the back of his limousine, giggling. Did you hear that? Did you hear that? I just signed her death warrant. Even though she was saying, please don't kill me. Please don't kill me. At some point in time, we have got to get past the idea of the human being as disposable object, the human being as consumer, the human being as movable toys on the giant global risk board. And the idea of entire sectors of our citizenry being acceptable, being acceptably ignorable. And it happens in communities of color. It happens in the disabled community. It happens in communities where poverty lives. God knows I know it here in Appalachia. Because if people were not disposable, you couldn't blow up their homes and call it free enterprise. If this nation is to last even another 100 years, even another 50 years, at the rate we're going, somewhere along the way, we have to figure out that human lives have value simply because they are human lives in being. Sarah Cruzan says, at the age of 32, I've got me some moral scruples now. What kind of a sick, psychotic bastard in a black robe looks at a 13-year-old child and tells her she has no scruples? The answer is easy. The kind of sick, psychotic bastard in a black robe who has no moral scruples himself, who views the abused as actually willing participants, and who has no more business on a judicial bench than a hog does at Sunday dinner. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
It's Ange.
Hey, Ange, how are you?
I'm good. Wow. I was on the phone for a while, then I got disconnected, and I was listening. I think they called in when Cassie was on, but man, that's a lot to sink in. That Sarah Cruzan story, when did that happen? If she's 31 now, this happened several years ago.
Yeah, figure what, 19 years ago?
You know,
so that would be what, 1990?
This story that happened all these years ago, you wonder how many other stories. There's probably hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
There are 2,005. Yeah, Ange, there are 2,500 people who are doing life without parole for crimes that they committed as teenagers.
They get off. Or anybody that has money gets off.
Sure.
And then I was like looking at this video of this girl was telling a story, and she seemed like a very intelligent person. You know.
Yeah. Well, the closing
paragraph. A little kid, a little naive kid.
The closing paragraph.
By the people that were supposed to take care of her.
The closing paragraph to the article, Ange, says today Cruzan is 32 years old and described as a model inmate, despite any real lack of incentive. Who wants to excel in prison? She says. Asked what she would say if she had a chance to appear before a parole board, she says that she believes she can now be of some value to society, perhaps even a positive example. And also, she says, I've learned what moral scruples are. She sure didn't learn it from that judge.
That is, I don't know, that is just, it makes me want to cry. That this young person had to endure that. And then, you know, they blamed it on her.
Yeah, and I mentioned that 2,500 number, Ange. Of that 2,500, 175 of them are women who are doing life without parole for crimes that they committed as teenagers. That's 175 human beings that when they were still children, we simply said, we don't care what happens with the rest of your life. We're throwing you away. You're human garbage.
That's very sad, you know. It makes me wonder how everybody was in the mood of when this jury was going on, because David mentioned, you know, Judge Judy. Well, I watch Judge Judy all the time, recorded, and sometimes I don't agree with her. Sometimes I just think she has an attitude and she don't like a person when she looks at them. And they're not going to win either way. I don't know if you ever watched that show. But,
I've seen it enough times to know that I don't want to.
So, I mean, if that goes on in shows like that on TV, probably doesn't realize. I mean, and then there's the bribing, there's the this, and then there's the that, you know. It's a police state. And I had someone tell me that, an attorney tell me this, like years ago, that's been in, I'm not mentioning names, but, you know, that's been in this for 30 plus years. And that's what he told me, and it is. They'll do what they want to do. And depends who you're buddies with or whatever. Who knows? I mean, we're not in the clique, so how do we know? And I don't even think I want to be in a clique like that anyway.
Too much moral sacrifice for the... Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know? But yeah, when I first called in after listening to Kathy talk, I'm going to change the subject. But, you said something about student loans.
Yeah.
Yeah, if she gets too many student loans and doesn't get a good job after she graduates, it can be a lot, you know.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's the nice
Unless
thing about
going to
these universities and colleges that have viable student aid programs lessens the likelihood of coming out with student loans. For instance, one of the colleges that I'm familiar with, Berea, down in Kentucky, if you get in, nobody pays tuition, nobody pays room and board, and everybody has a job all 4 years. But you come out without that student loan monkey on your back, and that enables their graduates to go and work almost exclusively on doing the right thing and doing good in the world.
Yeah, and you know, she needs to know what she's getting into, because I know somebody that went to Rensselaer, and after they graduated, they got a job making $60,000 plus, but they had $300-$400 student loans, because college is expensive.
Yes, it is. And it will eat you, and the debt will eat you up.
If you don't read it, I mean, yeah, you're going to be, unless you get a good job, you need to really pay attention to what's going on. Because I think if a person is dedicated enough and knows what they're talking about, in the field that they're in, they can get a job, you know, experience. Is the main thing, but I don't know. It's so expensive to go to school nowadays.
And that just underscores the need for incredibly hard work and you know, kick-ass grades. You gotta have help to get through it. I mean, that's why, you know, I'm constantly beating the drum here in our own home to Agnes and my kids, our kids, you know. you must work harder than you are expected to work. You must do more than you are expected to do.
You know, to get these scholarships.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be able to write a check, and I know it, and it, you know, it's the kind of thing that keeps you up nights.
Yeah, I know. My parents couldn't pay for my school, and I paid for it myself, so. Yeah, you just have to do what you have to do. But, Sarah Palin. It's another thing that I was thinking about when you guys were talking about it. Sarah Palin. There are these people, and I know you know about this, these people that are in this mindset, and they're, you know, 50-some years old or 40-some years old or whatever, and they've been raised by their parents, you know, to be Republicans and this and that. It's almost, in a way, like that book, What's the Matter with Kansas?
Yeah.
And the people are actually going for the opposite of what they're...
Yeah, they're voting against their own economic best interests.
Their own economic destiny, yeah. And it's like, but there's these people out there, and there's the Fox News people. I know people like this. They don't believe, now they update, they keep their computers updated with all the Fox News stuff, and they've been trained to think this since they've been born. And they're not, I mean, it's like there's no way to change it. Unless their you know, religious news source changes views. Because they're going to always look at you like you're crazy, and you're talking some conspiracy theory. I don't know. I'm sure you know people like this, don't you, Bob?
Yeah. I do.
Don't you just want to scream?
Oh, I don't know, Ange.
Well, I think Sarah Palin has a possibility, you know, to do something. Just like you said, even bad publicity is publicity. You know, and then...
My hope, though, is...
They're just teasing her because they hate her, and they're liberals or whatever. And so it even makes them more popular for that group.
In that group. But the thing is, that group is shrinking and not growing.
Oh, gosh.
No matter how much Glenn Beck and that ilk squeal about it, that group is shrinking and not growing.
I hope.
I know.
I hope, because it... It feels like they're monopolizing everything.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how many people they get to D.C. for their freedom protest, their freedom rally, that riot that they're trying to incite. Remember, the people who are calling for folks to go to D.C., like Michelle Bachmann, she has called for people to get their guns and get armed to the teeth to deal with climate legislation, to destroy it, to defeat it, to make sure that we continue to poison the planet.
Yeah, just kind of like that hearing that you guys had up there that you didn't get to talk at with all the coal.
Oh, well, I mean, I wasn't there, but, yeah, we were shouted down, right.
We're out, yeah, and I heard that on your show a few weeks back. And I cannot believe, it's like, you know, that town is being taken over by anarchy of what these people want and not... how the law should rule. They're making their own laws. It's crazy.
I know.
Just another thing of what the law and what they want to do. It's like, you know. So this is America.
Well, this is, you know, but this is what we're experiencing now, Ange, is government of the money, by the money, and for the money.
Yeah, and with all these, like, the news, there are all these newspapers around here that recently got all bought up by the same company. All these people got laid off. But now this one company that owns, oh, God, and I know his name, it's in the back of my mind. I maybe have to call you back and tell you. But they own all the newspapers here now, except for maybe the little... free shoppers and stuff.
Right.
that are independently owned, but all the major newspapers in Northwest Arkansas area got bought up by one company. And it's how, you know, and that's happening all around the United States with the all the stuff that's been going on. You know, it's funny how it's like people blame it on Obama now, but it's like, no. This is the mess he has to deal with, you know, the people that make all the, he's, you know, trying to.
But he's not making it any easier for the. But he's not, Angie's not making it any easier for the real liberals and real progressives out there who hate things like extraordinary rendition, who hate things like domestic spying and wiretapping.
Yeah.
When his Justice Department turns around and tries to justify it.
Even if he wants to do this, he can't. He don't have any control, really. Like he, you know, thinks he does. And I'm sure he's probably freaking out by now. Who knows? I don't know.
I know. Ange, good talking to you, dear. Got to roll on. We've hit the...
It'll be a good movie.
You take care. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye.
Bye. Calling from Arkansas, that's Ange. So that's how we wrap up Moran Monday. We seem to have had an abundance of Morans from the Republican Party, and you all have obviously got your fingers on the pulse, and you're able to spot them from a mile away. I'm glad, because that means there's a chance that when you spot the Morans, you might be emboldened enough, and I seem to recall Boss Man Wayne saying that's an old Serbian word, emboldened. You might be emboldened enough to speak up and add a little bit, add intelligence and sanity to the steady drumbeat of sprayed roach crazy that's out there coming from the Moran right. Hallelujah, you know. So thanks, everybody, for joining in this evening. We'll be back tomorrow night. And, you know, now that we've gone through the time change, it really is night here. Night comes, you know, night falls on the Appalachians as the show begins. Thanks for contributing to keep the horn going. We are working to try to find other ways to sustain the horn. But we're a ways off yet, but we never stop. So thank you for keeping it going. It is a new month, and it's a new monthly fundraising goal. So I hope you'll bear that in mind. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The labor never stops because the threat has never stopped. We'll talk a little bit more about what went on in D.C. Maybe we'll do that tomorrow night. Maybe Guy and I can talk Guy into joining in on a conversation about that, because we had a magnificent time, and we were the information that came out in that conference was quite fascinating, and I will be uploading it to Ben for podcasting purposes. So bear with me. Until tomorrow, have a great evening. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are. It is Monday, a minute and a half past the hour. I'm home from D.C. Guy is back in sunny Florida. Not so sunny here. A little bit cool. Could be colder. Could be worse. But I'm back in the home studio, and I'm really, really glad to be here because the new week is upon us, and with every new week, well, you know how the weeks begin, right? Sure. That's right. It's Moran Monday. Morans aplenty. Morans abound. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Come on down, see the stunning morons. Morans on parade from the GOP. Hurry, hurry, hurry. I don't know how stunning slipped into that little bit there. But well, yes, I do. this is... You can tell that they're the morons are sort of feeding off of each other. A few weeks back, one of the biggest morons in America, Representative Michelle CO2 is natural, therefore it's good for you, Bachman, described Representative Steve King, Iowa, another moron, as stunning, saying he'd be he's stunning and he'd make a great president. Well, it turns out that Representative Steve King, Iowa, moron, gave an interview to some local Iowa television station, WHO-TV, an NBC affiliate in Des Moines, where he wouldn't say yes and he wouldn't say no. He was being all coy. But what he did say, never mind. Just let it be what it is.
But we are calling for people to come to Washington, D.C., fill up the Capitol, fill up the offices, let them see the look in your eye, and let them hear the tone in your voice when you let them know respectfully that you don't want them to take away your freedom to purchase your health insurance policy of your choice. And if you can't come to Washington, then I want people to come to these district offices, fill up the offices, get on the telephones, call into talk radio, write emails and letters, make phone calls, visit, but above all, fill up Washington, D.C. If we can do that, we can turn this around. And it is not going to be an argument that I make to other members of Congress or anybody else for that matter. They are dug in. The only thing that will change their mind is if they realize that they might lose their job and the American people might call them home for taking away our freedom.
One thing I heard you say.
Taking away our freedom. Our freedom to be sick. Our freedom to die from needless disease. Our freedom to watch our loved ones descend into the hell, damnation, agony, misery, and chaos of illness that could be prevented by access to meaningful medical care. Yes, take away our freedom. That's what them liberals is trying to do. Take away our freedom to be miserable and sick. But then again, when you're Representative Steve King and you've got a brain as diseased as his, sickness may look like something good. Now, let's go on with Steve King on this Moran Monday, if you please.
And there is do it respectfully. Does that mean that some of what we saw at the town halls, the passion is good, but maybe the volume was too much in your mind, or what do you think?
Well, at each one of my meetings, I had at least one person that got up and vociferously disagreed with me. And the very first one, I turned to the public that was booing and hissing him and said, let Larry have his say. Because I've at a number of times voiced an unpopular opinion, and I always appreciate it if people would listen to my full argument. So I don't think the volume has to be real loud, but I think people need to convey not just their argument on the facts, but let them know what it really means to watch our freedom be diminished and be put into a compartment where our kids could never, ever buy a health insurance policy like we can buy today. The government will write all the rules. It's in the bill. And no one can sell health insurance the way...
Yeah, but Steve, what about the people who can't buy the health insurance right now? Not children, not some generation down the road. What about children right now who can't get health insurance? You know, you're Steve King. You voted repeatedly against the expansion of the CHIPS program so more children could have insurance. What about that, Steve? Well, never mind. You just really hope people will come to Washington and have a little teabagging riot there in D.C. Do you want them to bring their guns, Steve? Should they bring their guns to Washington, D.C., too? I don't know. Of course, the for-profit journalist didn't get around to that question.
It is today, after 2013, according to this bill, the government will write new rules. So let's be respectful, but let them know that it matters more than just an analytical analysis, and it does get emotional when you're talking about taking away people's freedom.
The president's administration.
He's got his talking points down, doesn't he? When you take away people's freedom. How free are you when you're on a ventilator in a hospital bed? How free are you? How free are you when you're laying dying at home because you don't have health care and you were afraid, you know, back when the disease was treatable, you were afraid to go to the doctor because of the bills that would be involved. How free are you then, Steve?
Sending out numbers, I think it started yesterday, about how many jobs the stimulus package has created. Combine those numbers and
okay, here comes the Moran math made easy.
Are they where they were supposed to be?
Well, I think it's interesting, the question about how many jobs the stimulus package has created. I remember the promise was that they were going to create or save 3 million jobs. And we got down to where it may have saved some jobs and created some government jobs. But if you can't draw a definition and tell us how many have been saved versus how many have been created, I'm not going to be willing to agree or accept the numbers in either category. And when you use that, let's say that verbal sleight of hand, save or create, on that day when the language came out, save or create 3 million jobs, I said then that if there are 3 million jobs left in America, that will be the jobs they point to and say, see, we saved those. So you can't do it from government. You can't create jobs from government. Free enterprise creates jobs. It pays all the bills. It produces the goods and services that are necessary for survival and quality of life. And government takes the vitality from the...
In China, of course. Quality.